It was, in short, nothing like going to Berlin with Charlotte Holmes. Greystone was headquartered in Mitte, a neighborhood in the northeast of the city. Milo had begun it as a tech company specializing in surveillance. He expanded his operations when it became clear that there were certain things humans couldn't do. All I knew was that his employees, his soldiers and spies, were the main independent force on the ground in Iraq, and that, once, Milo had ordered his personal bodyguards to frisk everyone at Holmes's 8th grade graduation. Holmes ran me through this and more in the cab from the airport, though I knew the bulk of it already. I wasn't sure if she'd assumed I had a bad memory or if she was chattering on because she was nervous. She had good reason to be. In the next 10 minutes, we'd be face to face with someone whose brother spent this past fall exploring fun and creative ways to have us killed, someone who'd faked his own death to escape that family and prison, someone Charlotte Holmes had loved so much she tried to have imprisoned because he didn't love her back. August Moriarty had a PhD in pure maths, a Prince Charming smile, and a brother named Hadrian who'd probably taught him everything he knew about wheeling and dealing stolen paintings. Who else would Milo possibly tap to guide us through the city? I wanted my axe back, or Milo's head on a pike. The city was bare of snow and warmer than London, and I realized I didn't really know a lot about where we were. Anything I did know about Berlin was rooted in world history textbooks and movies about the Second World War. I knew about the Nazis, and I knew that Germany made the best cars, and that their language had compound words for emotions I didn't know had names. My mother liked to refer to Schadenfreude, joy at the misery of others, whenever she laughed at the traffic report on the radio. "Who would be silly enough to own a car in London?" she'd say. We took the tube like proper Londoners, or like what she thought proper Londoners should be. The Berlin I saw now reminded me a little of London, in that the buildings we saw all seemed to be on their second lives. A grocery store we passed had the facade of an old museum. A post office had been turned into a gallery. The old Deutsche Bundespost sign faded above a window that displayed sculptures of ears. I spotted a painted lamppost looming on the brick wall behind a real one. Everywhere there was art on the buildings, on the billboards, creeping down the brick walls onto the streets in murals that read, "Kill Capitalism," and "Believe Everything," and "Keep Your Eyes Open." The words were all in English. Lingua franca, I guessed, though I remembered hearing that the city was full of émigré artists, drawn by the cheap rent and the community. What struck me the most was how none of the graffiti had been covered up. It was like the city was made of it, this twinned transformation and discontent, and the storefronts that stood new and clean began to look unfinished somehow, at least to me. Though it wasn't all like that, especially as we approached Mitte. The car took us by park after park, postage stamp-sized in the middle of neighborhoods, and as we approached Greystone, we passed grand old beautiful museums, giant turnabouts, walls that gardens hid behind. I pulled out my notebook to write it all down. Beside me, Holmes was looking out the window too, but I didn't imagine she was taking any of it in. She'd been there before, and anyway, if I were her, I'd be deciding what I could possibly say to August Moriarty. By the time we pulled up to Greystone, I had a full page of notes, and I hurried to finish them as the cab stopped. "Come on, Watson," Holmes tossed a bill to the driver and dragged me out the door. Greystone, it turned out, took up the top 10 floors of a glass tower that loomed over the rest of the block, new and strange in its surroundings. Because it was private security, because it was Milo, we were put through a metal detector, a full body scan, and 2 separate fingerprinting kiosks before we were sent up to him on the freight elevator, floor after floor of office space. His penthouse was at the top. "He knew that we were coming, right?" I asked Holmes for the 10th time. "Obviously," she said as the elevator lurched. "Did you notice how hastily that retinal scan was set up? He's obviously washing his security feed with a bowl of popcorn. Jackass." The elevator lurched again. "Stop insulting him," I told her, "or we're going to plunge to our deaths." Milo Holmes had always reminded me of an actor who'd wandered in from a movie set in another century. He had the same sonorous speech as an English professor, and I'd never seen him wear anything but a tailored suit. One of those suits was folded up in my suitcase. I tried to feel bad about having filched it, and failed. His offices were just like him, old-fashioned and stuffy, like the MI5 of old spy novels. It was like he'd cherry-picked his favorite fictional references and rearranged them into a hodgepodge of mismatched places and times. But I hadn't really expected the armed guards. 2 steps out of the elevator, and a pair of them stopped us, automatic weapons pointed at our chests. One started mumbling rapidly into her wrist, something about unfriendlies and unauthorized access. "We were cleared. We should be fine," I said to the guards, my hands up. They didn't budge. "Should I be speaking German?" The other soldier hoisted his gun to my face. "I guess not." It came out sort of high-pitched. Holmes, unbothered, was peering up into the light fixture. "Milo, I know you can hear me. Have you entirely forgotten your manners? You're making Watson squawk."
"Of course I haven't," her brother said, stepping out of a door that swung open from the wallpaper as if invented on the spot. He nodded to the guards, and they shouldered their weapons, disappearing down the hall in the 2-bit magic show that was Milo Holmes's bread and butter.
"Wasn't that fun?" he asked.
"No," I said. "Do you treat all your guests this way?"
"Only my little sister," he said, tucking his hands into his elegant pockets. "You know, you could have come up the visitor's elevator and we would have had far less trouble."
"They put us on..." Holmes lifted a hand to stop me. Her eyes were scanning the room. "You haven't updated your lobby. It still looks like an ugly antiques shop in here."
"It is, as you well know, not a lobby. This is my private residence," he said. "You've seen the actual lobby quite often, and now you've been x-rayed in it. Would you like to visit it again?"
"Yes, it is so good to see you spending your time on worthwhile causes, like photographing my teeth, when you could, in fact, be looking for our uncle, or adding guards to the family estate."
"Who says I'm not?"
"I am. I'm watching you do nothing."
"You wouldn't know how to look."
She took a step toward him. "You monstrous pig. I knew how to read people before you knew your alphabet."
"Oh, because I've been holding my tongue about the fact that you and your colleague there have obviously begun doing the nasty, and that, pity, it's not going very well."
At that, Holmes lunged, and he dodged her, letting out a triumphant laugh. "Guys! Guys! Where is he?"
"Who, Watson?" she asked.
"August Moriarty. The reason you two are fighting? I could be wrong about that. It's just an assumption." I looked Milo over head to toe, the way I'd seen him do to me. "As is the assumption that no one's done the nasty to you in years. 3, 4. Milo adjusted his glasses. Then he pulled them off and began polishing them with a sleeve.
2, actually," a soft voice said behind me. "He never really did get over that Comtesse, and I haven't seen any girls around here since."
Charlotte Holmes went completely still.
"Though it's been longer for me," the voice said, "so I shouldn't really be making fun. Speaking of, I hear I have you 3 to thank for breaking off my engagement. And I do mean that. Thank you."
Milo sighed.
"August, it's good you're here. Lottie, I've given him access to my contacts. He'll show you around. Frankly, I have more important things to do."
He stopped at the end of the hall.
"By the way, Lottie, Philippa Moriarty called to confirm your lunch. I've left her number in your room."
With that bombshell, he left. I didn't have any time to process it. I'd been left with Holmes and Moriarty. And because I am a coward, I waited until the last possible second to turn around. August Moriarty was dressed like a starving artist. He had on ripped black jeans and a black t-shirt and steel-toed boots, black, of course, and his hair was cut into a blonde faux hawk. but while he was dressed like a poet, he had the polish of a rich kid, and his eyes were burning with an intensity that reminded me of... Well, it reminded me of Charlotte Holmes. All of him did. In the picture of him I'd seen on his math department's website, he was smiling in a tweed blazer, and now he was standing here like her looking-glass twin. Before they'd even exchanged a word, it was clear that they had done something to each other. Broken each other, maybe. Or distilled each other like liquor, until all that was left was hard and strong and spare. They had a history that had nothing to do with me. Maybe I was reading too much into it. Into him. Things between me and Holmes were tenuous enough already, though, and here was a gust of wind that could take the rest of it down. A very polite gust of wind. "Milo said some nice things about you," he was saying as he shook my hand. He had a tattoo on his forearm, something dark and patterned. "Which is interesting, since Milo usually doesn't notice people that aren't holograms." "I didn't know the two of you were close," I said. I had to say something. We were still shaking hands. He had a strong grip. I pressed harder. He laughed, a friendly sound. "We're both ghosts. Where else would you work if you legally don't exist? I'm fairly sure that Milo scrubbed his digital footprint so clean that he wasn't even technically born. We have that much in common." "That makes sense," I said, because he was still shaking my hand. "I should probably also apologize for my brother. Do know that I never told him to kill you." My fingers were starting to go numb. "I'm pretty sure I'm just the collateral damage there." "Right, of course. Of course." A strange look passed over his face and then vanished. "Sorry." "So, Philippa," I asked, "are you too close? Do you know why she'd want to see us?" "Not really," he said. "We haven't spoken since I died." I risked looking over at Holmes. She hadn't moved except for her hands, which were pressed against her sides. She didn't look nervous or scared. She didn't even seem like she was cataloging him the way I'd expected her to, taking in whatever changes the last 2 years had worked on him, what her betrayal had done, whether he hated her for it. She was just looking at him. "I got your birthday card," she said quietly. "Thank you. I hope you didn't mind that it was in Latin. I didn't mean it to seem pretentious. I just wanted to..." "I know. It reminded me of that summer." Her eyes brightened. "That's what you intended, right?" August Moriarty was still shaking my hand. More accurately, he was holding it because neither of us was moving anymore. He was staring at her like she was a penny at the bottom of a well, and I... Well, I was staring at the space between them. "I need this back," I said, and pulled my hand away. August didn't appear to notice.
"You must be exhausted from your trip, both of you. You're here for the week, yes? I'll have Milo's body man show you to your room so you can settle in. You had lunch on the plane? Excellent. And tonight, well, there's a bar we should go to. Some things I'd like your opinion on there."
"Aren't we going to talk about this Philippa thing?" I put every bit of venom I was feeling into her name.
"Is the bar the old Metropolitan?" she asked him.
"It's Saturday night, so it's where Leander would be."
"We'll go tonight. I can't imagine what he's... I can't wait any longer than that."
"The old Metropolitan," August said, and there was a surprising thread of bitterness in his voice. "You just knew that, didn't you? How did you guess?"
"I never guess."
I cleared my throat. "We could have just asked my father. He's been getting daily updates from Leander since October. I'm sure he has a list of places for us to look.
And can we talk about Philippa? What does she want with you?"
Neither of them even glanced at me.
"Walk me through it. How you knew it was the old Metropolitan," August said, drawing her over to a bench between the elevators.
He sounded intrigued, and something else, something darker.
"Step by step, and slowly.
Charlotte, it had to be a guess."
"It's Saturday night," she repeated, "and I never..."
"No, you don't," I said, but I was saying it to no one. I decided to find my way to my room on my own without waiting for Milo's body man, whatever that was. I couldn't stand between Holmes and August for another second. But it wasn't difficult to orient myself. Most of the doors on the hall were key code locked. Honestly, I didn't want to know what was behind them, until I tried the one at the end of the hall. I opened it. I took a breath. It was like being back at Sciences 442, like being back in Holmes's room in Sussex. It was like being back inside Charlotte Holmes's head. The room was dark. Unlike her lab at Sherringford, this one had a window, but it was tinted so dark that no natural light crept in. A series of lamps snaked down from the ceiling. Some half-finished chemical experiment was laid out on a table, with a set of burners and white powder measured out into piles. No shelves, but books everywhere, piled up beside an overstuffed armchair, behind the sofa, on either side of a white plaster fireplace, and inside its grate, too, like kindling. I picked one up from the pile beside the door. It was in German, with a bisected cross on its cover. I set it down. In one corner, uncomfortably close to the chemistry set, someone had brought in a twin bed. It was clearly a new addition, much nicer than the shabby furniture surrounding it. It was clearly meant for me. I decided to camp out on Holmes's bed instead. Milo, or his men, had built a loft for her, a bed bolted high up into the wall, as small and remote as the crow's nest of a ship. From up there she could survey her tiny fiefdom. I wondered how old Holmes was when Milo gave her this room. 11? 12? He was 6 years older. He'd have been 18 at the beginning of building his empire from the timeline Holmes had given me, and he'd given her a space of her own in that new life. As I climbed up the loft's ladder, I tried to imagine a miniature Holmes doing the same, a flashlight clenched in her teeth. She must have felt like Milo's first mate, surrounded by his loyal men in a ship's cabin of her own, untouchable, away from the world. I knew what I was doing. By taking over her perch, I was gunning for a confrontation, some sign that she still knew I existed. "Watson," she'd say, lighting a cigarette. "Don't be a child. Get down here. I have a plan." August Moriarty wasn't a child. He was a man. That had been my first impression, and the one that ultimately mattered. I couldn't help seeing him as a standard by which I'd already failed. If he was the finished sketch, I was the unfinished space around it. Let me put it this way. I was 5'10" on a good day. I had on faded jeans and my father's jacket. I had $12 in my bank account. And still, somehow, I was along for the ride, and the ride was in Europe, where my best friend paid for everything and spoke German to the driver, and I tried not to feel like the cargo she'd strapped to the top of the car. Time passed. 30 minutes. An hour. I hated this line of thinking, but it was what I'd been left with. To torture myself, I wondered what Philippa Moriarty could possibly want with Holmes, why she would agree to a lunch. I mean, I wasn't stupid. I had a few solid ideas. Death, dismemberment. But going through Milo's mercenary company made me think she wasn't up to serving violence. A detente, maybe? Maybe she knew where Leander was being kept. Maybe she was going to tell us that she wasn't siding with Lucien in this ridiculous war. Maybe she'd found out that her little brother August was alive. As an act of desperation, I took out my phone to text my father. "What do you know about Philippa Moriarty?" The response was prompt. "Only what's been in the papers, and you've seen that too."
"Why?"
"What about a bar called the Old Metropolitan?"
"Leander went there on Saturdays to meet with a professor from the Kunstschule Sieben, one of the local art schools, a Nathaniel. Gretchen was another name that came up quite often."
The forgers Holmes had mentioned. "Any other places I should know about?"
"I'll email you a list. I'm happy to hear that Milo's taking this so seriously."
I was pretty sure that Milo wasn't, and that he'd shoved us off on August because of it. I put my phone away. After a minute, I pulled it back out.
"When you were working with Leander,
Did you ever feel like you were his baggage? Like he'd insist on taking you along on a case, and then he'd run off and solve it without you?
Of course. But there's a way to stop feeling like that, you know.
How? I asked. I don't know when my father became someone I trusted to go to for advice. It was an uncomfortable feeling. My phone pinged.
I've put $100 in your bank account. Now run off and solve it without her.
The old Metropolitan was busier than any bar I'd been to in Britain. Not that I'd been to too many bars, but I'd seen enough. In Britain, you could have a beer with your dinner at 16 if your parent bought it for you. At 18, you could order whatever you wanted for yourself. Germany's laws weren't all that different. One of the great ironies of my life is that I got shipped off to America for high school, a country that didn't let people drink until they'd nearly graduated college. The old Metropolitan was full of students. It was only a few streets away from the Kunstschule Siebens campus, something I learned while wandering the neighborhood. When I'd left Greystone HQ, it was still late afternoon, so I decided to spend the time before nightfall cultivating a disguise. I'd watched Holmes remake herself in front of me, how putting a slight spin on her usual presentation turned her into an entirely different person. I'd asked her once what she thought of me going undercover. She'd laughed in my face. Not this time. I bought a hat and a pair of shit kickers at a thrift store. Then I found a barber shop and asked them for a haircut I kept seeing on the street, shaved on the sides and long on top. My hair was wavy, but whatever he styled it with made it lay slick and straight. When he finished, I put on my glasses and looked in the mirror. I'd always had something that made grandmothers want to talk to me in waiting rooms. I looked friendly, I guess. I'd never been able to see it myself, but I saw its absence now. Grinning, I stuck the fedora on the back of my head, tipped the barber, and went out to find some dinner. Simon, I thought. I'm going to call myself Simon. I walked to Old Metropolitan with a gyro that I'd gotten from a sketchy-looking food truck up the street. Whenever I was in a new place by myself, I was always aware of how I was walking, what I was looking at, worried that I'd seem like a tourist and be slighted somehow for it. Tonight, I was wandering along like a local, licking the tzatziki sauce off my fingers, looking at the street art with disinterested eyes. Simon didn't care about the giant neon dragon painted over the old Metropolitan's doorway, teeth bared like a warning. Simon had seen it a million times before. His uncle lived just down the block. Simon was used to the crush of people inside, too, and so I kept my face bored as I pushed my way up to the bar. But I almost lost my composure when I looked over the crowd. Despite my new clothes and haircut, I was the least avant-garde person in sight. The girl next to me had pink hair that faded out to electric gold. She was gesturing with a giant glass of something, and it sloshed at me while she spoke to her friends in German. The only word I recognized was Heidegger, who was a philosopher. Who I thought was a philosopher. Did I know that from The Simpsons? I tried to avoid eye contact. Instead, I ended up staring down the bartender.
"What'll it be?"
he asked, clearly pegging me for English. I reminded myself that that was fine. Simon was English. Jamie was panicking.
"A Pim's cup,"
I said with fancy posh boy vowels, because I decided that Simon was rich, and because people drank Pim's cups at the races I'd seen on television, and yes, it was becoming abundantly clear that Holmes was right. I was an awful spy, because if tonight was any indication, my entire knowledge of the world came from Thursday night TV. But the bartender didn't shrug or raise an eyebrow. He just turned his back to make the drink. I made myself relax, one muscle at a time, and willed my brain to stop racing. I put my hat more firmly on the back of my head. My plan had been to nurse my drink and eavesdrop until I heard the Kunstschule Siebens come up in conversation. Then I'd sidle over and introduce myself as a prospective student visiting my uncle over the holiday.
"Maybe you'd know him. Tall, slicked back hair, English like me. Can I buy you a drink? Do you know a girl named Gretchen? I met her here last week."
etc., ad nauseam, until someone mentioned the last place they'd seen either of them, or Leander's mysterious professor, and I'd be off on a new lead before Holmes showed up on her blonde Gaston's arm. It had seemed fairly foolproof when I'd thought it up. Like all foolproof plans, it turned out to be ridiculous. First off, it was loud in the old Metropolitan. I could barely make out what languages were being spoken around me, much less the actual words. Second, I hadn't counted on the intimidation factor. I'd never had problems in the past striking up a conversation with strangers, and I couldn't pin down why it was proving so difficult now. Maybe because I'd spent the last 3 months talking exclusively to someone whose idea of small talk involved blood spatter. She's ruined me, I thought, and sank down a little over my drink. The last bits of Simon scattered. What did I think I was playing at, anyway? I wasn't any good at this. I didn't even want to be here, in this bar, wincing against the Klautwerk turned up to 11, while the dude next to me played with his labret piercing. I leaned out to ask the bartender for my bill, but I couldn't get his attention. When I sat back down, I noticed a girl across the bar drawing me. She was being pretty obvious about it. Her sketch pad was braced against her knee, and she kept sneaking glances at me over the top. She had long, glossy black curls and a cute, upturned nose. The kind of girl I used to like, when I liked other girls. Before I knew what I was doing, I picked up my drink and headed her way. Her eyes widened. Then she bit her lip. I was feeling pretty confident. Well, Simon was feeling pretty confident. "Hi," I heard him say. "Are you using charcoals?"
"I am. What do you use?"
"My dashing good looks. Where was this crap coming from?"
"What's your name?"
"Why?" She spoke with an American accent.
"Are you from the States?"
"No," she laughed.
"But my English teacher was."
Simon sat down next to her.
"I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to tell me the truth, okay, love?"
"Jesus Christ.
Were you drawing me just then?"
She angled her sketch pad toward her body.
"Maybe."
"Maybe yes, or maybe no." Simon lifted a finger to the bartender, who came right over.
"One of whatever she's having. A vodka soda."
"A vodka soda." She hadn't instantly shot Simon down. He grinned at her. If there was a part of Jamie somewhere in that smile, both he and I decided not to notice. "Is it a maybe yes now?" Her name was Marie-Hélène. She was born in Lyon, in France, but the rest of her family lived in Kyoto. She loved visiting, she said, but really she wanted to live in Hong Kong someday.
"It's like it's a present place that's in the future," she said.
She was studying at the Kunstschule Sieben because when she was a little girl, she'd gotten lost in the Louvre during a family trip to Paris, and instead of getting scared, she'd found herself wandering entranced through the Impressionist wing.
"I drew water lilies for years after that," she said. "I made my parents call me Claude, like Claude Monet."
Simon liked her. More than that, I liked her. She had an impish quality to her, like she was keeping a secret. But a small one, nothing Holmes-sized. She was nothing like Holmes, in fact, and it made me want to cry from relief.
"I was drawing you,"
I snapped back to focus.
"What?" "That look you just had. You had it before, too. Like your grandmother died, but you're angry about it. It's interesting and a little disturbing."
Marie-Hélène turned her sketchbook around to show me. A boy in a stupid hat, staring down at his hands like he could find some answers there. It was a good drawing. I hated that it was of me. I forced myself back into my Simon-shaped cage.
"I'm more handsome than that, aren't I?" he asked her.
"Yes."
She toyed with her drink, looking up at me.
"You are."
I didn't know what to do next, because usually in this situation I'd lean in to kiss her. Correction, what I used to do next was lean in, but that was at parties in people's basements, not bars. Would that even work here? It was what Simon would probably do. I wanted to. I did, and still, I didn't want to at all. Should I change the subject? Ask about Gretchen, the art forger Leander had made contact with? About her professors? Should I just kiss her and pretend it didn't make me nauseous? The moment passed. She took a sip, then brightened.
Hey,
she said, waving a hand to someone over my head.
Over here!
In an instant, we were surrounded by chattering girls. One was wearing a paint-splattered backpack, so I figured they were her friends from school.
Everyone, she said. Everyone, this is Simon. He's British.
And in the flurry of introductions that followed, I thought I heard the name Gretchen. My pulse quickened.
I was thinking about going to the Kunstschule Siebe next year, I yelled over the music.
It was disco now, and louder.
I do video installations. Do any of you do video installations?
Yes,
the girl next to me yelled back.
Can I ask you more about it? Friday mornings.
I wasn't sure if she'd heard my question, or if her English wasn't that good, but the crowd of girls was moving now, and Marie-Hélène grabbed my hand in hers. An invitation to follow. I threw some money down on the bar, feeling thoroughly triumphant. We'd go to a party. There'd be other students there. Surely someone would know something about Leander, and I could go back to Holmes with information, something that she and August wouldn't have. Or would. Because, like a nightmare, she and August were standing between us and the door. 5. I hadn't seen them come in. I'd say it was a testament to how good their disguises were, but they weren't dressed to fit in with this crowd. They'd taken the opposite tack from me. August was done up in full douchebag tourist mode, from his gelled hair down to his white sneakers and calf-high socks. Holmes stood beside him, fishing something out of her fanny pack. Her wig, mouse brown, hung lankly around her face. She glanced up. Her eyes traveled down to my hand, clasped with Marie-Hélène's, and I thought I saw her blanch. Either way, she recovered quickly.
"There you are,"
Holmes cried. I thought she was about to blow my cover when she turned to August and said,
"I told you he couldn't ditch us for long."
Marie-Hélène gave me a questioning look.
"They're my cousins, visiting from London,"
I told her, trying to reclaim the narrative.
"And I didn't ditch them. They said they wanted a night to do touristy things by themselves."
"Well, tell them to come along."
Her friends were already on the street. She disentangled her hand from mine and pushed the door open into the night air. August and Holmes were on my heels.
"What's your name?" she hissed. "Simon. Yours?"
"Tabitha and Michael."
"Are you supposed to be siblings?" I asked August. The both of them were wearing brown color contacts.
"We are, but it's not believable. I'm much prettier than she is."
I grinned, then reminded myself that I hated him. "She drag you into this?"
"I am standing right here," Holmes said, stamping her feet a little in the cold. "Where are we headed, Watson? What have you found out?"
Nothing yet, but I didn't want to tell her that. I was still smarting about her and August ignoring me before. We were having lunch with Philippa tomorrow. We weren't at all dealing with the fact that her mother had been poisoned.
"I found out that French girls like Simon a lot," I said instead, and trotted to catch up with Marie-Hélène and her friends.
The air had gotten colder since earlier this evening. I reclaimed Marie-Hélène's hand under the pretense of warming it up. Was I aware that Holmes was behind me, watching? Obviously. Was I above doing things to make her jealous? Well, no. It wasn't hard to like Marie-Hélène and her friends, though. They chatted about the new Damien Hirst show going up the next week, and when, tired of maintaining my know-it-all pose, I confessed I didn't know who that was, they were kind about filling me in. Apparently he put cows in formaldehyde. This was art? Yes, they told me, it was. In a world where information was currency, I was usually bankrupt. It was nice, for once, not to be mocked for it.
"Where are we going, exactly?"
I asked the girl with the paint-splattered backpack.
Some of our friends rent from this super-rich art dealer. He has a house up ahead.
With her chin, she pointed to a tall brick building on the corner.
The only catch to living there is that he can use it to throw parties on the weekends when he's in town. You'll see why. It's a pretty cool space. We all usually go.
But, I asked, because her tone was darker than her words.
But he's a creep,
she said, shrugging.
He's like 50, and his new girlfriend is always some baby Zeebin student. A lot of these girls have dated him. It's like making a deal with the devil for a little while. You meet some people, you get bought some nice things, you sleep with a gross old man, and by the time he ditches you, you've gained something from it. You'll be fine, though. He doesn't like boys.
My skin crawled.
You're Gretchen, right?
I asked, hoping she'd point toward who was.
Gretchen?
She shook her head.
I'm Hannah. Marie Ellen was calling us her Mädchen, her girls. Is that what you are thinking of?
I was stumbling into some sleazy party based on something I didn't actually hear in a bar. Marie Helene pulled me up the steps to the brick building's door.
Our destination awaits, she said, ushering us in.
The main floor was surprisingly dark and quiet, but it wasn't our destination. Without turning on a light, Hannah felt around to her right until she found a door frame.
Down these stairs, she whispered. Turn on your phone if you need light.
At the bottom of the stairs was a door, and beyond that door was a cavern. Marie Helene and her friends made a beeline for the bar in the corner. I was left standing with one hand on my hat, taking it all in. The cavern didn't feel natural. The walls were lined with tile, and the ceiling had a perfect arch that meant it was man-made. A damp, sharp smell hung in the air. It took me a moment to place it as chlorine. I pushed past a knot of people and saw its source, a massive pool in the center of the room. One girl kicked her legs on an inflatable swan, holding her martini glass safely above her head. A pair of boys were dangling their feet in the water as they made out. Everywhere, a dim, fractured sort of light speckled people's faces, speckled the walls. Without thinking, I turned to clock Holmes's reaction. It was what I always did in these down-the-rabbit-hole situations. It took me a minute to find her, still standing up on the now-deserted staircase, and I caught the end of a transformation. A subtle one, this time. Somewhere along the way, she'd lost the fanny pack. One hand was hastily unbuttoning her cardigan, and the other was tapping some kind of lip gloss on her mouth. The whole process took less than a minute, and when she stepped down into the party, she was wearing a little black dress and a haughty expression. In this light, her mouse-brown hair looked soft and warm. She was recognizably the same girl as she was in the old Metropolitan, and she wasn't at all. On her tottering heels, she padded up between me and August.
"Boys?"
she asked, and on her cue, we took her elbows and led her into the party. I leaned down to whisper in her ear.
"Is this the part where we share information? Because I know how you came up with the old Metropolitan. It's just something you've overheard back in Sussex. No magic there."
She glanced up at me.
"It's all magic, Simon," she said. "If I'm to believe what you write about me."
"He's your biographer?" August asked.
"Like Dr. Watson?" "Jesus, that's ador-"
"It is not adorable."
I pulled us to a stop at the pool's edge. Beside me, Holmes squinted across the room. The light from the water was freckling her cheeks, and I resisted the urge to touch her face to see if I could make them scatter.
"Of course I know it isn't magic. I'll prove it. Do you want me to tell you what you'll do next?"
She smiled almost imperceptibly.
"Go on, then."
I gave myself a second to look around the party. Hannah had been right. Here and there someone broke the mold, but really there were two kinds of people here. College-age girls and men who gleamed with that particular sheen of money. The girls were mostly in tiny dresses, but the men were all dressed differently, some in suits and some more like artists, some in rumpled black and some neatly pressed. Some had a dancer's build or the anxious stare of a writer. Next to us, a girl was flicking through what looked like slides of her work on her iPhone.
"As you can see," she was saying, "I'm an excellent candidate for your opening."
Immediately, Holmes turned her head to listen. Focus, I told myself, and looked around the room again. I was not going to make a fool out of myself, not with blonde Gaston over her other shoulder. There's a man in the corner, I said finally. The one with the scarf and the round glasses. He's the best candidate for Leander's professor contact. What was his name? Nathaniel? Beside me, Holmes made a humming sound. She wasn't looking at him. Her attention was fixed on the conversation behind us.
Explain your reasoning.
It suddenly seemed so important for me to be right, to get her to look at me, really look at me, the way I needed her to. Squinting, I considered the man in question, who was telling a story with his hands.
His body language. He seems much more relaxed than the other men here. He's not jockeying for status or trying to get laid. He looks like he's catching up with friends, and the people around him are at ease, too. Look at the guy next to him. He's, what, 18? And he just whacked Nathaniel on the arm while he was talking.
Now he looks shocked, probably at his own gumption, and everyone's laughing. They're all comfortable with each other. He's their authority figure, but they like him.
With the calm electricity of a hunting dog in a field, Holmes stared down the man in the suit.
The only problem was that it was a different man in a different suit.
Plus, he's handsome, I said desperately, trying to refocus her. And people meet at the old Metropolitan to walk down here on Saturday nights. And you said your uncle was involved with someone here, someone in this scene. Does Leander like redheads?
Holmes grimaced at the mention of her uncle's sex life.
Yes, yes, fine. Except we're not in a position to approach him, so it doesn't matter. None of us are done up like art dealers, and you're a little too spot-on to play a prospective art student. You look like you just came from Central Casting. A disconnected undercut, Watson. Really?
August smiled to himself.
Marie Helene buys it, I said, setting my jaw. That's because she thinks you're handsome.
And you don't?
Nathaniel was looking over at us now. I'd been staring.
Quickly, Holmes turned to me, adjusting my collar.
You look ridiculous, she said. Her hands were warm. I like you much better as yourself.
There was a trace of something in the air, sickly sweet and familiar. Forever, ever cotton candy, the Japanese perfume that August had given her years ago.
You look good, Simon, he was saying, reaching past her to clap me on the shoulder.
And really nice work, with the deductions.
It came out unnatural, like he'd learned how to compliment people from an instruction manual.
Anyway, Holmes said, pulling away from me, we'll deal with him later. Big fish first.
What big fish?
There was a look on August's face, something strange and drawn, but when I glanced again it was gone.
Charlotte, we're going to go play pool, he said.
We're playing pool? Don't you mean in the pool? I paused. Why the hell would we play in the pool?
Go off then, she said, coiling a strand of hair around a limpid finger. She was already slipping back into character. I imagine I'll work faster on my own anyway.
Holmes and not Holmes. Business-like words in a porn star voice.
I'm sure you will, Tabitha, August told her, annoyed, and steered me away. Past the bar, past a circle of overstuffed chairs, past a group of men in suits all smoking and checking their phones, while a girl in a skirt served them drinks. I wondered if she was one of the art students who lived here, too, if that was part of the deal. I felt sick. There was a pool table in the corner. Unlike the heavy, ancient ones in Holmes's house, this one was made of acrylic. You could see straight through its legs to the wall. Only the felt surface was an opaque white.
This seems pointlessly complicated, I said.
What does?
This party, this situation, this pool table. I kicked its leg.
Who got bored enough to make this thing?
August was already racking the balls.
Are you any good at pool?
I'd played some in the afternoons in a pub near my school, which, of course, meant nothing because I'd spent most of that time staring at Rose Milton, girl of my freshman daydreams.
Eh, I said. Well, it's all geometry and hand-eye coordination.
He tossed me a cue stick and lined up his shot.
Terrific.
So the idea was to drag me into the corner and ritualistically beat me, and then explain why you and Holmes ditched me in Milo's military funhouse earlier.
With a resounding crack, he broke the balls across the table. Two solids went in the far right pocket.
"Tell me," he said, leaning against the wall, "do you ever get sick of playing the victim?"
It was so far removed from anything he'd said before that I thought I must have imagined it.
"Excuse me? Jamie, I've known you for less than a day, and you already flinch every time I talk to you."
"I'm not..."
"I haven't been anything but nice. What exactly is the problem?
You seem... Either you're completely naive, or you're a fake. The way you talk to me is ridiculous. The way you look at her..." Deep breaths, I told myself. If I beat him into the floor, Holmes would kill me. "I guess I'm Stripes."
"You are, but it's still my turn."
His eyes were on the table. The solid-colored balls had all wandered into improbable corners. I was sure he was working out some mathematical solution.
"Are you really that insecure? Or is it something else?"
"Do you know what you are to her?" I snapped. "Because I do."
"No, you don't. Not from what I can tell. I wasn't asking you about Charlotte."
I glared at him, his ugly tattoo, his posh accent, his 23-year-old bullshit confidence.
"Then spell it out for me, genius."
"Maybe you need me to," he said, and with an elegant motion, he knocked another ball into a pocket.
"Maybe I need to say to you out loud that I didn't diddle any children."
Another shot, another ball.
"Or that I didn't feed her drugs. Or tell my brother to ruin her life and raise an American boarding school. Or almost have me killed," I said.
"You didn't tell him to do that either. Is there some reason you're suddenly so mad at me?"
"I'm not."
"You are." August's cue stilled in his hands.
"I faked my death to escape my family. Jail time, too, but mostly them. My parents agreed to let me go. My siblings think I'm dead. I'm not the enemy. I'm not the bad guy. I thought I'd made that clear."
His face was mercilessly blank, like he'd wiped off all emotion with a cloth. But his words sounded genuine.
Well, enemy is kind of a strong word.
Jamie?
Just take your shot.
He looked back down at the table and very deliberately scratched. I picked the cue ball off the floor.
"You didn't do anything to me, so you don't need to feel bad. I don't need a pity win."
"No," he said. "I think you need a chance to play." That sounded like you'd been rehearsing it for a while. He scowled.
"I'm trying to be nice to you."
"Stop trying. You're not nice, or if you are, you're out of practice." I paused.
"I'm not very nice either. God knows Holmes isn't."
That pried a smile from him, a real one, if sad.
"I am nice, Jamie. I haven't talked to anyone in a while."
We traded shots after that. August began playing with an ease that he hadn't had before, pointing out angles, lining up a shot for me when I couldn't figure out how to get my blue two into the side pocket.
"Are you in love with her?"
I asked him as he sank another ball. His face went blank again. Was it his tell? Is this what he looked like when he was upset?
"Are you?"
"It's complicated." I watched him, but his expression didn't change. "If you aren't, then why did you look at her the way you did, when we first arrived?" August sighed.
"I've been in Berlin for a few years now. I do data entry. Milo gives me a pile of spreadsheets, numbers usually about which airbase has X number of metal gaskets, and I put it into a computer. They came from a computer in the first place, so it's totally unnecessary. It's fake work. Make work. There are actual things I could be doing for Greystone, but you're a Moriarty."
The waitress came by with her tray. I took a glass and offered it to August. With a half-smile, he accepted it.
"Because of who my brother is, and who my aunt and uncle are, and so on and so forth, I can't be trusted with sensitive information. Or an interesting job, apparently."
"Milo hates you that much?"
"Milo is a spy master. God knows how that one worked out for someone so determined to not leave their building. He doesn't hate anyone. He doesn't like anyone either. But he does love his sister, and she wanted me to have a place to go, so he did her a favor. I'm dead. Nobody out there can know I'm not dead. Nobody out in the world can recognize me. I had limited options, so I took it.
He downed his wine in a determined gulp.
Do you want to know why?
Yes, I said, because I'd been wondering why for weeks.
I took that job because there's a ridiculous war on between my family and theirs, and I wanted to wave the white flag. If I made friends with Milo, if I convinced my parents to extend an olive branch, if I was able to smooth things over. But I was younger then and stupider. My parents won't even talk to me anymore.
I whistled. August made an ironic little bow.
You know what they say about good intentions, he said.
No kidding.
So here I am. No friends, no family that aren't criminals or would-be ones. Just me and a mathematics dissertation I can't finish researching because dead men don't do postdocs and I work on fractals in Antarctica. There are no dead man ships headed that way anytime soon. I live in a sad little room in Milo's sad little palace. I can't leave the building because...
He shook his head angrily.
Look, when Charlotte walked in, I was... I don't know. It was like my past hadn't been erased after all. The good and the bad, all of it. It was like it still existed somewhere out there. I still existed. I didn't realize how lonely I'd been until I saw her.
And it's as simple as that.
She's my friend. Maybe it's self-destructive for me to like her, but I do.
He shrugged.
I try not to blame her for what happened. Her parents... Well, never mind. You can't keep her in a box, Jamie. And you can't let her do that to you, either. She and I were quite close, if you can believe it. And when it didn't play out between us the way she needed it to, she threw a grenade at me and ran away.
August, we were trained in the same way. We think the same way. We had the same self-destructive solutions to problems we face.
So you're casual bros now? I don't buy it. You want me to believe you can just hang with the girl who ruined your life?
The words came out more caustic than I'd planned. August blinked rapidly, almost as if he was fighting off tears. And there it was. The real emotion I'd been waiting to see. And it was brutal.
It's not like I have anything better to do, he said finally. Dead, remember?
I eyed him. Despite the clothes and the polish and the heaps of self-pity, he was hard to dislike. Later, I would wonder if it was because he reminded me of a version of Charlotte Holmes who'd been raised by the enemy.
Do you ever get sick of playing the victim? I asked him, because I was good at taking those kinds of openings. No, he said. It's actually quite fun.
And he sank his last few balls, one right after the other. Asshole.
For reference, that's the only sensible way to answer that kind of question.
Crack the balls, dickweed, I said. And for that night, at least, we were friends. 2 games later, Marie Helene drifted over in time to catch me in the middle of a yawn.
Long night?
She did that pretty girl thing where she casually slid under my arm.
No, I told her as August took his 5th shot in a row.
I'll win in the end.
I wasn't sure if I believed that, but Simon did. Simon liked how soft she was, too, and after a moment I caught myself playing with the ends of her hair. Honestly, it felt nice. It's simple. When did I start thinking a good relationship had to be complicated? Friendship, I understood. There had to be an arc there, some kind of story that the two of you were telling just by being together. Something made up from what you wanted from the world and what you got instead. A story you reminded each other of when you needed to feel understood. I saw you in the quad that day, mine would go. I'd always thought you would be blonde. I'd always thought you'd be my twin sister, my other half. And then I met you, and someone killed the meathead down the hall, and you became something else to me. Because other than our friendship, I felt like I had nothing to show for this year. Like I was a circuit board where all of the tangled cords ran straight to Charlotte Holmes. And still, it wasn't just a friendship. When I met her, I'd stopped looking at girls in the way I used to.
and I used to look at girls all the time. More than look, I made out with them in my room to Radiohead turned all the way up. I texted them to say goodnight. I was a good boyfriend while the relationship lasted, though it never lasted long. Still, they were never my friends, not the way that Holmes was, and I didn't know if what I was feeling was a kind of reversion to my former self. Was I re-becoming 15-year-old James Watson Jr., a pair of tickets to the Highcombe School Spring Fling in my pocket? I was so much more now. I was past all the hopeless crushes, my inability to separate friendship and love. Wasn't I? I'd been thinking for so long that what I wanted from Holmes was everything. Like this thing between us was a Wonderland rabbit hole that we could fall endlessly and never hit the bottom. I wanted us to belong to each other completely in a way where no one else could come close. Maybe I felt this way because she was so strange and private and still, somehow, had invited me in. Me, out of everyone in the world. Maybe it came from how we met, the two of us together in a foxhole. Maybe I wanted her to be my girlfriend because I didn't see what could happen if I found myself wanting someone else. I wanted a stamp to put on our file. All boxes checked. No one else needed. She didn't want me to touch her, but she wanted to be near me all the time. Closed circuit. Keep out. Son of a bitch, I thought, and it wasn't just because August had won this round, too. Too bad, Marie Helene leaned against my chest. If you're ready to give up, I can introduce you to someone. My drawing professor's here. He doesn't do video installation the way you do. Thank God, I thought. I couldn't BS a professor. But maybe he could talk to you about Zeppelin admissions for next year. August was silently racking the balls for another game. I'll be right back, I told him, because the person Marie Helene was waving at was the man I deduced to be Nathaniel. Okay, Simon, August said, and I remembered how not simple any of this was. That was how I found myself staring at a set of charcoals in an industrial loft 5 blocks away. Think about form, Nathaniel was yelling. Think about style. I'm thinking about killing him, I told Marie Helene, who looked horrified. Holmes would have snickered, but Holmes wasn't there. After an interminable hour listening to him gas on about creating from your gut, really feeling the rawness of the world in your work, I sympathized a bit more with Holmes and her aversion to expressed emotion. Talking about your feelings was a lot different from talking about feeling in the abstract. If this is what being an artist or a writer was like, maybe I wasn't one after all. Especially if it involved growing some neckbeard. Nathaniel's was as lush and overgrown as moss. I decided that if this was the guy that Leander had been kissing, he was doing some serious slumming. But Marie Helene and the rest of his coterie hung on his every word. I understood why. He listened to his students' opinions, knew things about their lives. He teased Marie Helene about her new crush within minutes of meeting me. I thought about Mr. Wheatley, my old creative writing teacher, and how good it felt when he'd taken an interest in my work last fall. Even if he'd feigned that interest for his own messed up, villainous reasons. So maybe Nathaniel was a blowhard. He seemed like a nice guy underneath it, and I sort of felt bad, knowing that I was the villain in this situation. Unless he was a villain, too. You should come to Zeppelin next year, Nathaniel had said to me back at the party. You're a nice kid. Smart. I can tell that you're smart. As usual, these miscreants are having a late-night draw and drink tonight, and they've talked me into coming along. Why don't you show me what you've got? I can put in a good word for you with the admissions committee. Hence, we'd gone a few blocks over to this industrial loft, which maybe belonged to Nathaniel, God only knew, and now I was holding a piece of charcoal the way I held a cigarette, the one and only time I tried to smoke one, which, for the record, isn't how you hold a cigarette or a charcoal. Is that what you call it?
"A charcoal?" I asked Marie Helene as the students around us shuffled around to look at each other's progress, beers in hand. Nathaniel was deeply engrossed in a girl's work on the far side of the room. I had no idea how to approach him again, and people were beginning to put on their coats.